Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the expository writing department here at Car Talk Plaza.
Now, you never know if these things are for real, but it doesn't really matter.
We don't care. Like that vowel drop to Bosnia. That probably didn't really happen, right?
Probably didn't happen. But does that make it any less funny?
No.
No. Well, here's this week's collection of bad similes and metaphors. Actually, we should thank Stephen Weed because he did send it to us from cyberspace. I'll just give you a few of my selections.
A smattering.
The plan was simple, like my brother-in-law, Phil. But unlike Phil, this plan just might work. The young fighter had a hungry look, the kind you get from not eating. He was as lame as a duck. Not the metaphorical lame duck either, but a real duck that was actually lame. Maybe like from stepping on a landmine. I mean, there are names after all of these. And you would think...
Any names you recognize?
I'm looking for my kids. Her artistic sense was exquisitely refined, like someone who can tell butter from, I can't believe it's not butter. Here's another winner here. The ballerina rose gracefully en pointe and extended one slender leg behind her, like a dog at a fire hydrant. He was deeply in love. When she spoke, he thought he heard bells. Like if she were a garbage truck backing up. This one's disgusting, but it's funny. She grew on him like she was a colony of E. coli, and he was room temperature Canadian beef. She walked into my office like a centipede with 98 missing legs. And here's my personal favorite. He fell for her like his heart was a mob informant and she was the East River. I mean, this is pretty creative, I have to admit.
The young fighter had that hungry look. And you get him not eating. Well, look, if you're tired of bad writing and prefer bad car advice instead, give us a call at 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-827-8255.
Wow, the number gets longer every week.
Hello,
what
you're
is
on.
It, like 15, 20 digits now?
Yeah.
Great.
Well, I'm going to see if I can express this as a power of five. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Liberty.
Liberty.
Liberty, yes. Valance.
Now, that's going to be a name that came. You were born in the 60s?
No, I wasn't. I was born in 1980.
Really? 80?
Yeah.
Oh.
80s, huh?
Liberty.
And yeah.
Are you from, like, Philadelphia?
No, I'm not from Philadelphia, and I was not born on the 4th of July, and my last name is not Valens.
Or Mutual.
Or Mutual.
And you're not from California?
No, I'm from Boise, Idaho.
Your parents were from California?
No. My mom is actually from New York.
All right, well, the question must be asked, what were they thinking?
Well, no, I like the name, actually.
Well, I do, but it is unusual.
They wanted something different.
So they call you Libby?
Yes.
Libby.
Yeah.
It's great.
Well, thanks.
Anyway, what's going on?
First of all, I drive a 1990 Nissan 240SX.
Okay, mm-hmm. Got it.
The first problem I'm having is my steering wheel, normally between the speed of 35 and 65, shakes back and forth.
Got it.
Bad.
Really bad.
It's bad. That's bad.
Yeah.
That's potentially dangerous, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
Next problem. We'll do this on a triage basis.
Okay. And the next problem is, about 6 months ago, I was having problems with my brakes squealing when I stopped.
Yeah.
So I went and had my brake pads replaced.
Yeah.
And it still does it.
Does it do it worse when you first start driving the car in the morning, or is it worse other times?
Probably when I first start driving the car.
Okay.
And every time you step on the brake, you hear...
Exactly.
And you haven't taken it back to have them look at it?
No.
I didn't bother.
Okay, the triage says we got to look at the shaking business first.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Have you had anyone look at it?
No, I haven't.
How long has it been doing it?
A couple months.
Oh, Liberty. This is really dangerous.
Oh, no.
And it's so dangerous that if it's been doing it for a couple of months, you should not drive the car again.
Oh, no, you're kidding.
Right. Could mean death. You've heard the expression, give me liberty or give me death. Death may be waiting for you. You could have a bad ball joint, which is ready to fall off and make the wheel come off the car.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Or you could have a bad tire, which is ready to strip its tread off and blow out while you're driving at 60 or 70 miles an hour. In either case, the potential of a grave danger here is high.
Yeah. You should never forget about shaking steering wheels. Never let it happen.
Never ignore stuff like this.
I mean, you've got to really always look at that. That's really dangerous.
Okay.
And the squealing brakes, they can look at the same time. When they have the car in the lift, they can pull the wheels apart, make sure that, in fact, there's nothing wrong with the brakes, and I'm pretty sure there isn't. And they may have to just deglaze the brakes and apply something called disc brake quiet to the backs of the pads, and that'll stop that.
Okay. I wonder, I just recently got new tires for the back, and I have the older tires on the front. Could that have something to do with
it? Yeah, you could have had a bad tire on the back that you moved to the front, and that squirm that you were getting when it was on the back was unnoticed because the steering wheel's connected to the front wheels only.
Uh-huh.
And was the shaking coincident with that move?
Not that I remember.
Well, then,
I didn't make that association.
Okay,
but
if you didn't make that association, then under no circumstances drive the car again.
Okay.
I'm serious about it. Have it towed to wherever you have things fixed and have them look at it.
Wow, I didn't realize it was that serious.
It's very serious.
Thank God you called us.
Thank God.
See you.
Well, thank you.
It was in
See
the
you,
cards.
Liberty.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255.
Oh, now it's only 10 digits.
Lawyer.
Or 9.
Car talk.
Hello.
Hi, guys. This is Tony from Katona. How you
Tony
doing?
Tony from Katona.
I've been listening to you for years, but you got to help me out. I'm in a dispute with my wife and my 17-year-old son over a 92 Saab 9000.
Oh, I'll let my brother handle this because this is right
because
up his
I
alley.
I have several wives and several 17-year-old sons.
Okay, but do you own a Saab? Are you qualified in that area?
I'm not.
Okay. Well, let me run it by you anyway.
What Saab have you got?
It's a 9000. It's got 165,000 miles on it. It drives like it's new. I love the car. I really do.
Oh, this is your car.
Well, it was my car. I graduated up to a Subaru Outback. But at any rate, I'm getting a sweet smell when I turn on the heat.
Yes.
I'm also losing, in very cold weather, I'm losing radiator fluid.
Yeah.
All right. So, sure enough, when the car is ice cold, I pop the hood. I look down below the connection where the upper radiator hose is, and I see it dripping out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, radiator fluid being relatively cheap, this car being relatively old, I'm leaning towards just filling it up as necessary.
Mm-hmm.
I got through the whole winter with a gallon. The problem comes in with my son. He's claiming that this is having a long-lasting effect on his ability to concentrate. And as a result of that,
his grades are down.
Right, right. His grades are down. He actually dropped out of AP history, stopped cleaning his room, and is not taking Spanish anymore. Now, I've been telling him that I've been driving this car with this peculiar smell for about 5 years.
Yeah. And maybe you started out stupid.
Well, I might have.
Right, you may have had less of a slide to make.
Well, I'm thinking that this may be such a gradual thing.
Exactly.
That I don't know that something's wrong.
Right.
But he wants me to get it fixed. And I'm telling him that if he keeps pushing me to get it fixed, I'm going to get rid of it, and he's going to wind up driving a 96 Purple Caravan, so he better keep his mouth shut.
And your wife, of course, is on his side.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. They're
Without
always on the side
so he dropped out of
that you're not on.
AP history.
That's gone.
And Spanish.
He gave up Spanish.
Gone, and he stopped cleaning his room.
Stopped cleaning
his room. And he's telling me it's related to this peculiar smell that's emanating from the car.
The cessation of the room cleaning is the province of every 17-year-old male.
That's evolutionary.
Right, so I can safely discount this.
I think so.
I mean, that's a developmental thing, and I'm surprised. 17 is just about right.
And the reason he dropped AP Spanish and History is it's likely that the cute girls who were in the class also dropped it for different reasons.
Right. But, I mean, all of those things, dropping AP History and Spanish, and the not cleaning of the room are all characteristics of 17-year-olds with or without the inhalation of ethylene glycol.
Okay. All right.
It may be that the ethylene glycol is having an effect, but it probably has nothing to do with it.
Okay, now certainly...
On the other hand, breathing ethylene glycol vapors ain't good for you.
Okay.
I don't think. I mean, we do know it's a poison.
Well, all right. At this point, of course, that's becoming less prominent because as it warms up, I guess the metal is not contracting as much, and I haven't had to add it to the last month because the weather's been...
Really?
But you might have something as simple, Tony, as a loose hose clamp.
I think you should fix it anyway.
Or a thermostat gasket that's... I mean, it could be a $20 fix.
Right, right.
It could be, and you're risking countless thousands of... We know that you don't care anymore.
I could wind up having some tutors come into my house or something at $50 a pop.
Have you lost any hair in the last few years?
Well, I actually have. I have to admit that. But I grew a beard to compensate, so it's hard to tell.
That's the other side effect of inhalation of ethylene glycol vapors.
Yeah.
All right. So I'll just set a threshold of money, and if it goes over that, I'm going to donate the car.
Hey, make a deal with him. If he re-ups for Spanish or history, one or the other, you'll fix the car.
I'll fix the car.
See you, Tony.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Right. Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. My name's Chris.
Hi.
I'm from Keystone, Colorado. Actually, I'm from Chicago, but I've been in Keystone, Colorado for the last 4 months, and my 92 Ford Ranger pickup has been sitting on the street for 4 months now. And I have no idea. Well, I know what to expect a little bit. I know it's dead, and I know that I only have 3 tires working on it right now. So other than the obvious, I need a jump and a new tire. What else am I going to need to do to get this thing up and going?
Chris, and you're from, let's see, you're in Colorado,
mm-hmm.
but you're really from Chicago. That's a problem. I'm going to go with the CH.
Oh, me too.
Okay, very good.
Yeah?
Yeah, good guess, guys.
Okay, so you just abandoned this vehicle in Colorado, in Chicago.
I did.
What part of Chicago is it in? Maybe it's gone by now.
I'm North Sider.
North Side.
As you get in the city.
Okay, well, so, it might still be there then.
Yeah, it is there. I have had witness accounts that the vehicle, nothing is left inside the back of the truck.
Yeah.
But the truck itself is still there.
All right, what were the conditions under which it got to be there?
Well, I came out to Colorado to be a ski bum for the season, and so I just left it in front of my apartment building.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
And it was running. I mean, you drove it there and parked it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the car was running when I left for Colorado.
Oh, cool.
You didn't leave it running, did you?
No. I turned it off, and I made sure there was a full tank of gas so the gas line wouldn't freeze.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, what's the big deal?
So that's it. You don't.
So,
I mean,
now one of the tires is flat.
Yeah.
You must have a spare. You call AAA. They put the spare on for you.
Uh huh.
You turn the key.
What about you? Don't think I'll necessarily need to get give it a tune up right away and change the oil and.
Well,
no, I don't.
It's only a Ranger. I mean, let's not get carried away here.
You're right.
No, you'll find when you go back to drive it, when you do get it started, the brakes are going to make some horrendous noises. They're going to be grinding because they've built up rust on the brake discs and the drums. And if nothing else, I would probably get the oil changed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I would have them just throw it up on the lift and take a look in general to see if anything is awful.
Yeah, and, I mean, when it starts, don't rev the heck out of it. I mean, let it just start. Turn the key till it starts. Keep your foot off the gas.
Mm-hmm.
And don't step on the gas for a second or two. And just put it into drive and let it go by itself for a half a minute. And then step on the gas and drive and you're done. Don't worry about it.
Oh, great.
So you're going back. When are you going back?
I'm going back home Thursday.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So you've been skiing for the last 4 months.
Yes, I have.
What college do you teach at?
I don't. Actually, I'm a pipe fitter.
You
in
are.
Chicago.
Really?
Yeah.
No
and we had a slow winter, and I thought I'd come out and I'd pretend like I was in college again.
So there were no pipes fit to be fit, and you had to,
exactly.
You had to make your escape. So you escaped for 4 months?
I know. Is that amazing?
I mean, I can't believe there wasn't one pipe that needed fixing in 4 months.
Not that she cared about.
Well, yeah, don't get me wrong.
Somebody else will fit these pipes if they need to. I'll be skiing.
Exactly.
So what do? You fit like steam pipes?
Yes, exactly, steam.
Cool.
Yeah.
Boy, I would never have, if you had told me, I'll give you 300 guesses.
As to what
I do for a living.
Yeah.
Pipe fitter would have, I think, would have been like 302.
Yeah. 302. You had it down.
But
yeah, there's not a lot of lady pipe fitters. That's for sure.
Oh, you're a lady.
Yeah. Oh. That's right.
I knew that.
It was Christine. Maybe I didn't make that clear.
No.
Jeez, I mean, how many people would just drop everything, leave the truck parked in front of you? You didn't even bother to drive the truck.
No.
You just ditched it. I am envious of you.
You are quite a woman.
Well, thank you.
There aren't many like you around. Boy, oh boy, oh boy.
And maybe next year we'll do it in Australia.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good
well, Chris,
you.
A pleasure speaking to you.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. It was great talking to you, too.
I hope you're not too shocked when you have to go back to work.
No, she's ready.
But call us from Australia next year.
Okay, great.
See ya.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Now, before we give the answer to last week's puzzle, we have to take a short break so we can go to the Little Mechanics Room.
We'll be right back. The Little Mechanics Room? Your 87 Hyundai, it's sputtered, then it's slowed. And then like our romance, it died on the road. You would have left me, but you ran out of gas. You made your mind up, but it didn't. And even though the IRS stamps the network's returns audit mercilessly whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR. Hey, if you'd like to hear more Car Talk.
Yeah, like if you're a prison warden and need to send inmates running back to their cells.
You can download hundreds of classic Car Talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler. Do you remember last week's puzzler?
No. No idea whatsoever. Krusty? No.
I don't remember.
Automotive?
I was hoping you'd remember.
I don't have any idea.
No, it was an automotive riddle of sorts. And what I liked about this, it was historic, folkloric, challenging, what do you call that?
Interesting.
Interesting and vague. A new category.
New category. Vague.
Vague is good.
I do remember that I didn't understand the question.
You didn't?
I did not.
Okay.
I didn't know what you were talking about. But I knew that when you gave the answer, I would say, oh, that's what the question was.
There you go.
So the question itself was a puzzle.
There was really only one, and I'll repeat the question.
Go ahead.
What is it that we happy few, for a long time, could really do with our cars?
Yeah.
Okay, get that part. Right?
Yeah.
And that could be
anything.
A lot of things.
Yeah, like drive 600 miles an hour.
Then for a while, we could do it quite easily.
Uh-huh.
And no hints so far. I mean, this could be, again, a million things.
Yeah.
And now we can still do it. But here's the hint. It would take us 10 times longer to do it, if at all. And that's really the only hint.
The 10
times longer.
Yeah. If we take the 10 literally.
Well, it is literal. I didn't say about 10.
You said 10.
I said 10. It would take you 10 times longer to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you go back to the early days of cars, the thing that you could never get your car to do was to make it to 100,000 miles and flip the odometer over from all nines to all zeros.
Uh-huh.
And then as cars improved, you were able to do that.
Sure.
But now you can't do it on most cars because they've added another digit. They've added a sixth digit.
And
you
have
so you're going
to go
to 999. You're going to go to 1 million miles. And it's 10 times harder to do it, therefore, than it used to be. Do we have a winner? He hates
You're
it.
Not as big a jerk as I thought you were. No, I like it. Yeah, that's
and
good.
The best part is it's vague.
It's vague. Yeah, we do have a winner. It's Linda Soyars from Aiken, South Carolina. And for having her answer selected at random from among both of the correct answers that we got. I mean, the hundreds of correct answers that we got. Linda is going to get from us a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at cartalk.com, where she can get a copy of our CD of great stories that we have told on the air called Once Upon a Car Fire. Congratulations, Linda.
Yippee! Anyway, we'll have a brand new puzzler coming up in the third half of today's show. It is not automotive, but it is locomotive. Folkloric, historic, and
locomotive
in
it's
nature.
It's like crazy cars.
Kind of. Anyway, if you'd like to call us, the number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Andrew from New Haven.
Hi, Andrew. What's up?
Well, I have sort of a question about driving technique.
Oh, yeah. I will defer to my brother because...
Yeah.
He is a driving technique expert.
Yeah, I am.
Well,
yeah.
Here's the deal. I have a 92 Honda Civic hatchback with a manual transmission.
Yeah.
Yes.
My question is, when I let other people drive my car, I see them, you know, at a traffic light, they keep the car in gear and the clutch pedal is pushed all the way in while they sit at the light.
Mm.
And then the light turns green and they just release the clutch and go.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to me, I take the car out of gear and put my foot off the clutch and I put it in neutral. And then I press the clutch in again a second time to go when the light turns green.
Yeah.
And my question is, which method of shifting and stopping is going to make the clutch wear out faster?
Well, I'll begin to answer this, and my brother will feel free to interrupt whenever he wants.
Well, no, go ahead. I'll interrupt
you
right
now.
Which
is what he usually does.
Yeah.
In our pamphlet, 27,000 Ways You May Be Ruining Your Car and Not Knowing It, we sided with you that, in fact, you should remove your foot from the pedal whenever you are stopped, like at a traffic signal, and then when you're going to go, you step on the clutch, shift it into first, and take off.
Uh-huh.
And because it wears out the release bearing. Well, a few months ago, we received a letter of reprimand from a guy who was a hotshot engineer for some company.
A designer.
Like Bearing Company
of America.
Throwout
bearings.
Exactly. He designed and built throwout bearings, or clutch release bearings, as they're actually called, for the automotive industry. And his contention was that we are completely wrong, that, in fact, these bearings are made to take a continuous load, and that sitting there with your foot on the clutch pedal is okay.
Is it better?
Wow.
No, it isn't better because even if the bearing can take it, you're putting stress on the cable, which you shouldn't have to do. And don't forget, the bearings don't last forever. Even though they are designed to take this abuse, they eventually do break.
Uh-huh.
And if they eventually do break, wouldn't it seem reasonable that the less time you used it, the less likely it is to break?
Well, it seems reasonable to me.
Sure. Yeah. So I've changed my mind on this whole thing. Because
you're no longer with me?
I'm no longer with you on this because I've concluded.
And I've treated you like a brother all these years.
It's because I changed my name. So made you think I was your brother. No, I've changed my opinion on the matter because I decided that in the grand scheme of things, it hardly matters much. Because the truth is, most people do it wrong. I would say that of all the drivers there are of standard transmission vehicles, at least 75% of them do it like the people.
Yeah, but you're about to abandon your position of an upholder of truth and justice in the American way. No matter how many people do it wrong, there's a right way. Just like people say, every doctor should bring their medical books to class.
Oh, wait.
And every doctor should bring his medical book. You can't side with the masses.
No.
What's right is right.
I'm not siding with the masses because the masses are masses. I'm siding with them because
they outnumber you.
The grand preponderance of evidence suggests that it doesn't really matter that much. When was the last time, for example, that you replaced a clutch throwout bearing and didn't replace the clutch?
Well, that's beside the point.
It's not beside the point.
Does it matter to the giant scheme of things that people say every doctor should bring their books to class?
That's wrong.
But does it matter?
course it matters.
No, it doesn't matter. Nothing matters anymore.
No, what matters is that it doesn't make any difference. Because I believe that many years ago, clutch release bearings, or throwout bearings as they're called, did wear out before you needed a clutch. In which case, you had to take the whole stupid thing apart just to replace this one bearing. I don't think that ever happens anymore. In which case, why bother?
There are some clutches that get replaced because the bearing is getting replaced and not vice versa. And in those instances, those people's bearings wore out because they were either misused.
Sure, but think about this. That vehicle was going to need a clutch soon anyway.
Might have gone another 20,000 miles.
Maybe it would have. But the truth is that most vehicles, 99%, never need more than one clutch.
How about those clutch cables that break?
They need the original clutch, and they need one more. And then the car is garbage. So it doesn't matter whether you put the one in 20,000 miles earlier or later. When it goes to the boneyard, the clutch is going to still be good.
Well, why don't you put then you should put the clutch in as soon as you buy it.
It should come with two clutches.
Right. Say, by the way, take that clutch, the factory clutch out, put a new one in before I take delivery. Well, Andrew, you can see.
I do have to
agree with my brother that it isn't worth getting in a huff over
it
and losing any sleep over. If your friends really want to do this, let them do it. Try to not to look at their feet and their hands and whatever, and try to just make conversation, fiddle with the radio, stare out the window, or don't let them drive your car if it really bothers
you. Why are you allowing them to drive your car in the first place?
My father drives it occasionally.
Oh, this is the worst, then.
That's the worst?
Well, because you have to tell your father that he's doing it wrong? How are you going to do that?
Well, see, that's the thing. I need to know if I can be more forceful with him.
Oh, no, I mean, trust me. Kids have been cut out of wills for lesser transgressions. I don't think I'd mess with it.
No, I wouldn't mess. It isn't worth arguing about. That's my point.
Okay.
It isn't worth arguing about because it is certainly one of the smaller things in the world.
Well, he's probably going to hear this show anyway.
No, you're done for.
It'll be moot.
Yeah, you'll be out of the will.
Yeah, you're all right.
See you, Andrew.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for your call.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi there.
Yeah.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good. Who's this?
It's Michelle.
Of course.
Oh, of course.
Didn't you know that?
You sounded like, well, it's Michelle. Don't you recognize my voice? Where are you from?
I do. I listen to you all the time.
Oh, so we should recognize your voice.
Yeah, why not? There's only one me.
That's true.
Where are you from?
I'm calling from San Francisco.
San Francisco. That's out west of here, isn't it?
Yes. That little town on the coast.
Yeah. Where they have the
cable cars.
Right.
Anyway, Michelle, what's on your mind?
Well, I have this old Volvo that I just love, and it's like a bad relationship. I can't get rid of it.
How old?
242, 79 Volvo.
Jeez,
79.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay.
When it starts to rain, at some point the windshield wipers will spontaneously go on when the car's on, but I haven't turned them on. And then after that, eventually the battery dies and the charging system goes down, the alternator and the regulator goes down. And I've had people look at it and they can't find what's happening.
Well, it's convenient that they go on when it's raining.
I mean, yeah.
Only when it's raining.
Only when it's raining.
Because that's the only time that water is coming through the windshield.
To quote Amos and Andy, how do it know? How do it know?
Don't these wipers will then run when you're in the house?
No, when I turn the car off, they go off.
Yeah, so there's no reason for the battery to go dead. If you then tried to start the car, it would start right up, obviously, right?
Yeah, it takes a while.
But the next day, the battery goes dead?
Within the next week or so, a couple weeks, usually. I just imagine, like, some kind of short that's, like, draining my car. I don't know.
It's a rather vexing little problem. You vexed? You look fully vexed to me, man.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure that I think Michelle has somehow
you read into this something more than
I mean, you're telling us that these things are happening. I'm not sure I believe that they're related to each other.
Okay.
I don't think so either. I think that you have an underactive charging system. It's like having an underactive thyroid.
You need Synthroid.
An underactive charging system?
Yeah, you have a charging system that's barely working because you may have a bad voltage regulator or you may have a bad alternator, but no matter what, you're barely producing enough current to run the car.
Uh-huh.
And the other problem with the wipers going on, I think water is getting into the wiper relay.
I think you're right.
And short-circuiting it, and it only happens when it rains because that's the only time the windshield leaks.
So how do I fix that charge so it charges better?
You either need a battery or an alternator or a belt.
Or a regulator. I think this is
Or a regulator.
This may have a separate
regulator. Everything but the belt.
This may have had a separate regulator, but the new ones they sell may be all integral.
Okay.
You can get a new relay for your wipers.
Okay. Yeah,
see you, Michelle.
Sounds great.
Thanks for your call. Bye.
Thanks.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, guys.
Hi, who's this?
Mark from Malone, New York.
Mark.
Malone.
From Malone.
Where the heck is that?
About 75 miles from Montreal, Quebec.
If it's 75 miles from any place, then it is nowhere.
that constitutes nowhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
75 miles from where?
Montreal.
What's up, Mark?
Okay, let me say, you guys are really great. I serve subpoenas for a living, and while I'm out looking for these people, you guys are a great diversion. You really are.
Well, so are you.
Matter of fact, I got a couple for you, too.
Oh, no.
Is that why you called?
Yeah, to find out where you are.
No, you could serve them over the phone.
Yeah. Now, listen, guys, what I got, an 89 Chevy Cavalier with 175,000 miles on it.
Wow.
And while you're driving down the road, it acts like the fuel filter's dirty. It's not getting gas. Somebody's pinching the gas supply off, whatever. It'll chug. And then it'll run fine for 7 or 8 miles, maybe even more, and then it'll do it again. And I recently, the speedometer cable broke, and I noticed after a few days that the car ran perfect. When they hooked the speedometer cable back up, it went back to doing this thing.
Impossible.
What's going on there?
Impossible.
Well, that's what's happening.
So the speedometer...
Wait a minute. I'm working on this. The speedometer was disconnected.
Correct.
When the speedometer was disconnected, the speed is no longer being input to the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. Mm. Now, what can we do with that piece of information? Hold on here. Don't worry, Mark. We're gonna get this.
Jeez.
I mean, first of all, let's validate this thing. I mean, you... How long was it disconnected?
At least a couple of months.
Couple of months.
Correct.
And normally, prior to that, how often would your car exhibit these strange symptoms of the blah, 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 blah?
All the time.
All the time!
You guys are my last hope.
Oh, that's too bad.
did the check engine light come on when the cable was broken?
No.
Jeez.
No more. It's not that the speedometer is disconnected. Speedometer is also the speed sensor.
Well, the speedometer cable on this car. I'm guessing because I don't see many of these cars in the shop. They're so reliable. But I have a feeling that while this happened, when the cable broke, your vehicle speed sensor stopped getting an input from the cable, which should have turned on the check engine light.
Yeah.
But that's probably broken too. And it may be that you have a faulty VSS.
Okay.
But that is the only thing that I can come up with.
But so what? Why would that make it run bad?
Well, if it's sending a bogus signal to the computer, it's going to change the fuel air mixture and the timing and all that. If in fact it's sending a bad signal to the computer. And when the thing is out of the loop, it goes back to basic settings.
Right.
And it assumes that the thing is broken or disconnected, and it goes back to some... I'm sure it didn't run great, but you might not have any way of knowing that. But it ran a lot better with the thing disconnected.
Right.
And that component out of the circuit, so to speak. So it could be.
Yeah.
It could be the vehicle speed sensor
is worth
faulty.
It's worth replacing.
Okay, guys.
Okay, now, do you need any IRS advice?
No, I do great in that area.
You do? That means you don't pay them or they think you're dead?
Do you deduct your mileage?
Yes.
Were you able to do that in the 3 months that the cable was broken?
You didn't, like, fake it, did you?
No, I estimated.
What's your Social Security number, Mark?
I couldn't possibly give that out.
See you, Mark.
Hey, thank you very much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Hey, look, before we get to the new puzzler, and I know you can't wait, we have to take a short break.
Do we have to take a break? I mean, what if we don't want to take a break?
We have to. It's in the contract.
Our contract specifies we have to take a break?
Not our contract. The complaint line operator's contract. We'll be back in just a minute.
Oh.
The crowd I was in with, we love to go fast. Head out on the drag strip on those Saturdays past. Even when a couple of us bought the farm, we still believe that our lives would charm. Cause the chrome would flash and the tires would scream. Felt like part of the American dream. I'd always be the first one out of the gate. Legal breathing the papers from my Rocket 350 VA.
And even though the chairman of the NPR board doubles the network's errors and omissions coverage whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new, what did I say? Locomotive.
Locomotive.
Puzzler. Man, it has nothing to do with trains.
That's what I thought.
I didn't. Yeah,
it has
you knew
to do
that.
With crazy cars. Locomotive.
Oh, no, geez.
Does it?
No.
Yeah.
Okay. As Chico Marx was fond of saying, I'd like to play one of my own numbers now by Victor Herbert.
So, yes.
I'd like to give you this puzzler in the style of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Oh.
So pay attention. I'd like everyone to close his eyes, yeah, or her eyes.
And imagine...
Relax.
Yeah.
Okay? Imagine yourself in the English countryside.
I'm there.
You're feeling very sleepy. And if you're lucky, when you wake up, the puzzle will be all over. You'll have missed it.
I'm there, man. I'm on the English countryside. I'm riding in the dog cart.
Yes. It seems there had been a terrible accident in a suburb north of London, and Inspector Lestrade had been sent to investigate. Sir Richard Ashcroft was dead. And everyone agreed that it was an accident. Although some suspected it was a suicide. Oh. With there were all the problems that Sir Richard had had, you know, with the non-existent copper mines in Chile and that thing with the viceroy's granddaughter. But we won't get into that.
Yes.
Anyway, he'd been found on a rocky slope, his head dashed against one of the boulders and his mangled bicycle at his side. The facts seemed to speak for themselves.
Yeah.
He had lost control of his bike and it crashed. There had been no eyewitnesses, but finally, an eyewitness emerged. Nigel, Sir Richard's trusted gardener of many years.
Yeah, yeah.
You're paying attention? Now, there are lots of facts here that are going to obfuscate the thing, so...
We
so
knew that.
You did? You
that's
did,
unnecessary.
Did, unnecessary to state that. But, and then, there are some important pieces of information.
Nigel. Nigel appears.
So shocked by Sir Richard's death, he had been unable to speak for several days, but haltingly he told his story. I was walking back from town up that long hill leading to Sir Richard's estate when I saw him riding toward me, sitting straight up in his seat the way he always rode.
Mm-hmm.
And he was traveling at a high rate of speed. The Brits always say that, high rate of speed, even though we know...
Yeah, 30.
When suddenly, he jerked the handlebars to the left, and off the road he flew to his death. Lestrade asks, "Why didn't you come forward earlier?" He said, "I didn't come forward because Sir Richard told me he was taking his own life, and he didn't want to shame the family. And I decided to keep his secret, but I could not keep it any longer. I had to tell the truth about it. I saw Sir Richard take his own life by flying down this road, jerking the handlebars of his bicycle to the left.
I've got it.
Going off the road to the left, crashing into a rock, and ending his life."
Yeah.
Later that day, Lestrade is discussing the points of the case with his buddy, Sherlock Holmes, over cognac and Arturo Fuentes. And Holmes says, "Bring the gardener in for questioning. He's the perpetrator." How did he know? Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on a postcard or floated inside a fully assembled Pulsar Whirlpool bath with built-in armrest, a contoured teak bench seat, magic touch controls, and 6 turbo-powered jets.
And send it to
Muzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238. Or, of course, you can email your answer from cartalk.com, 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Liddell Cheatham from New Orleans.
Liddell.
Yeah.
L-I-D-E-L-L?
I had two D's.
No.
L apostrophe I-D-D.
L-Y-D.
Actually, it's just L-A capital D-E-L.
Liddell.
Really?
Yeah.
From
yeah,
New Orleans.
Family name.
From New Orleans, N-A-U-L-L-I-N-S. Got that.
And your last name is Cheatham. Are you one of the relatives of the members of our firm?
You know, it's possible. I do have some relatives up in the New England area. Do you have an Otis Cheatham in the firm by any chance?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Of course,
we do.
Sure. Yeah, we have an Otis elevator in our building, too.
Well, I got a question that's probably going to be real easy for you guys.
Sure.
Well,
but I've
so.
Had a hard time figuring this out. I'm a car salesman down here, and I just started in the business recently, and I was talking to some customer the other day.
I know the question already.
What's that?
Well, the question is, should I go for the patent leather white shoes and belt or the matte finish white shoes and white belt?
No. Liddell isn't wearing any patent leather shoes. He's wearing cowboy boots.
Oh, he may still be a trainee.
He's a trainee, yeah.
Right.
All right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Yeah, I'm still a trainee, you know, but I was spewing out these facts to this customer, and, you know, I started talking about so many horsepower at so many RPMs and so much low-end torque, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I basically know what that is in my head, but then the customer said, well, what's the difference between horsepower and torque? And I could not give them a decent answer, even though I knew what it was. And I asked the mechanics at this dealership, and nobody could tell me, give me a straight answer.
Well, you know, this is the danger in spewing out words that you don't understand, isn't it? I mean, that's why people get named BS artists. Because they're spewing out stuff that they have no idea what it means. So my way to avoid that is always honesty.
Yeah.
Honesty is the only way. You have to say, look, I read in the book that it's got so many foot-pounds of torque.
Yeah.
But to tell you the truth, I have no idea what that means.
Right. Yeah, that's what I've been doing ever since then.
Yeah. Well,
that's good.
You know,
that's safe.
The best way. That's the safest way out of it.
I mean, basically, the difference between horsepower and torque. Torque is measured in foot-pounds, and so is horsepower. But horsepower is foot-pounds over time.
So that would be
big. Isn't that exciting?
Well,
doesn't that clear
well,
it right out?
No, it's the ability to do, horsepower is the ability to do work,
uh-huh.
Okay, over a given period of time, okay, and it's and a horsepower is what, 33,000 foot-pounds per minute.
Per minute.
Huh.
So if an engine can do that, it has a horsepower.
Yeah, but see, if you had kept your big mouth shut, Liddell, I mean, if you hadn't even brought up the term torque.
Yeah.
Then they wouldn't have been able to ask you what's the difference between torque and horsepower.
Exactly. Rookie mistake. You know?
Rookie mistake, yeah.
Right. I would stay away from that, and I would gravitate towards the colors available.
Point them in the direction of the Corinthian leather.
Yes, I think so. The,
yeah.
Yeah. So how is it selling cars? I mean, how long have you been doing this, and how have you been enjoying it?
Well, I've been on the floor about 3 weeks. I just got off a two-week training period before that. And it's quite an experience, you know. my first week, I sold a car.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's a little nerve-wracking at first, getting in that closing booth.
Yeah, yeah.
But once you get the first one under your belt, you know, as long as I don't open my mouth about anything I don't know about.
No,
you know,
yeah.
Keep it simple.
The first
yeah.
one under your white belt.
See, I mean, you are stuck here in a very difficult situation because, I mean, I said when I get myself into trouble, I revert to honesty.
Yeah.
To admit that I don't know something.
Yeah.
But to tell you to be honest and also to sell cars, it almost seems like it's impossible.
I'm starting to wonder about that.
I mean, you may have heard of John Bugsy Sebastian Lawler,
yeah.
who is our technical advisor on the show.
Yeah.
And he started out as a car salesman also. And he admitted to us many years after the fact, of course, that whenever he said to a customer, I've got to go check this out with my manager.
Yeah, right.
He would then go into the manager's office, which was visible by the customer. So he could see them talking. And he said what they were talking about was where they were going to go to lunch that day.
But it would be accompanied by a lot of flailing, a very demonstrative conversation behind this closed door with the glass there.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And it would make you would have to make it look like you are pleading the case of the customer to the sales manager. So remember that technique. That works very well.
Yeah. They taught us that the first day of class.
I'm sure they did. Well, Liddell, good luck.
Well, I sure do appreciate y'all.
See you later.
Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Liz calling from Lovell, Maine.
Hi, Liz.
Lovell?
Lovell.
Lovell.
Lovell?
Like Jim Lovell.
Like Lovely Lovell.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
L-O-V-E-L?
L.
L.
Two L's.
Yeah.
That's what I wrote.
Yeah.
Where in Maine is that? Way up Maine?
We're actually in the Western Mountains right outside the White Mountain National Forest.
So that would make it like near New Hampshire.
Yeah. North Conway is about 45 minutes away.
Right.
Yeah.
Got it.
The best part of the state.
I mean, we've done this little geographical / cultural survey. And it's always been amazing to me that we have these three states, Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont, which are sort of near each other.
Yeah.
And yet the state character of each of these states differs so markedly from the other two. And I've never really been able to understand how this could be. I mean, the people from New Hampshire are totally unlike the people from Maine.
Well, I'll tell you why. First of all,
of course,
they're divided by a natural boundary. I mean, there are mountains, number one. Number two, people in Maine are seafaring people, a whole different kind of
people.
Not
in Western Maine. She's as far away from
that.
No, I'm not a seafarer. I'm a dog sledder.
Well, but you see, you really belong in New Hampshire.
No, she
they
really
may have
belongs
to change the boundary.
She may belong in Vermont.
No, there's not as much dog sledding in Vermont as there is in Maine.
Right now, there's been obviously an intermingling of cultures, but the original maniacs were all seafarers.
Yeah.
They were all transplanted Newfies and other Nordic types that found their way to Maine searching for warmer climate.
They
wanted to go from someplace where it was minus 40 in the winter to only minus 30. Oh, God. Why do we stop?
Well, I am amazed by all this. And there's a doctoral dissertation in here somewhere. I just don't know where. So, Liz, is that why you called us?
No.
I see it now. People, they're all the same. They're all different.
What's up?
Well, let's see. I have 23 sled dogs, and I have a Toyota pickup truck.
She wasn't kidding about the sledding.
No, I was serious. And I haul my dogs around in this truck.
What kind of a truck is it?
It's a 1990 Toyota two-wheel drive King Cab, and it has four extra leaf springs in the back.
Oh, so it's a 1990. It's a little Mickey Mouse truck. It's not a real
truck. Yeah, it's the only truck they made in 90.
It's a small truck.
It's a small truck.
Yeah, dog sledders don't have a lot of money.
You can't put all 23 dogs in the
back. No, I put about 12 to 14 in the back.
You can if you anesthetize them. Stack them up on top of the other with a rope.
If I stack them like cordwood and tell them all the way still.
Yeah, you could do it.
All right, you put some legs pointing east, some pointing west, and the one in the middle of the dog, the legs point straight up.
Anyway,
you have a question. We're just amused by this, and I think it's wonderful that someone has the time to own 23 dogs.
Yeah, it's cool.
Well, fortunately, they earn their keep. But but anyway, I've had this since its birth, this truck.
Yeah.
And I am trying to decide right now if I should hang on to this truck and put some work into converting it into a flatbed, or whether I should upgrade.
A flatbed?
I would convert it to a flatbed so I could put a double-decker dog box on the back. I don't know if you guys have ever seen a dog box.
Of course I've seen a dog box.
People ask me if I put pigeons in it and stuff like that, and I tell them.
How heavy would this double-decker dog box be?
Right now, the one I use is about 250 pounds, so it would probably be about another 100.
And then you have about 750 pounds of dogs.
Yeah, altogether about 1,000.
You got to get rid of this Toyota truck.
Get rid of it.
And
what
it's time for a nice F-150.
An F-150?
A real pickup truck. That's what I would do.
As opposed to buying another Toyota.
No, you're going to have to go for an F-250.
I don't think so.
You need to go for heavy duty.
1,000 pounds is nothing.
Yeah, but that's just the beginning. These dogs are going to get old. They're going to get lazy. They're going to get fat pretty soon.
No.
These 1,000-pound dogs are going to be 2,000 pounds.
No, they work for a living. They work for a living.
I hear them.
Yeah,
there's one. You want to say hi?
Yeah.
Hey, say hi, puppy. Oh, yeah.
Well, and what do they do for a living? Can they say, do you want fries with that?
No. They take people on dog sled trips.
They do?
Yeah.
Up in Maine there.
Yeah, up in Maine.
I'm going to come up and visit you sometime, Liz.
Yeah. They actually...
Can we do it in June, July?
No. In June, July... In
the glaciers
August,
will have
actually,
retreated.
I hook them up to the front of the truck, and they pull it in low gear.
Well, Liz, you go to your local Ford dealer.
Uh-huh.
And go look at an
F-250. An F-250?
I think so.
Used or new?
Either.
You never buy anything new.
Never buy anything
no,
new?
No, not if you're from Maine. No.
Well, I try not to because I don't have any money.
Yeah. No, you buy a nice 2 or 3 year old one.
Uh-huh.
And it'll last you many, many moons.
Okay.
Yeah, then you can cut the bed off with your torch and leave the bed in the front yard.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
The lawn art.
See
thanks a lot, guys.
Hi, Liz.
The dogs say goodbye.
Thanks, Liz. Thanks
all
for calling.
Right. Have a great day.
We had some wackos today.
Well, it's happened again. You've evaporated another hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blooper Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Pritchard. Our engineer is John Carton Parati. And our theme music is by David Dog Grisman. Our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Isle of Pines Poo Poo Platter and Spring Roll Invitational, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marge Novera. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzov. Our Russian downsizing manager is Yuri Placeable. Our director of top secret strategy is Donatello Nobody. Our meteorologist from New Delhi office is Luke Arovindo. Our former brake service manager is Carson DeLake. The director of Tom's sleeping arrangements is Al Fresco. Our on-call physician is Sarah Doctrinahouse. Our eBay specialist is Selma Junkoff. Our Russian chauffeur is Pikoff and Dropoff. Our French vacation specialist is April Lynn Paris.
I get it.
Our Australian tour guide is Joaquin Matilda. And our seat cushion tester, of course, is Mike Easter. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Louis Dewey, known to the Derrida courting cocktail waitresses in Harvard Square as Huey Louis Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1314, download classic Car Talk episodes, or check out our 25th anniversary swag all over at cartalk.com. Also this week at cartalk.com, our new guide to alternative fuels.
Yeah, everything you always wanted to know about running your car on ethanol, biodiesel, or Filippo Berio extra virgin olive oil.
Actually, it's just straight vegetable oil, not Filippo Berio.
Hey, you want your car exposed to trans fat? That's your business, pal.
All right, I give.
That's the Car Talk Guide to Alternative Fuels, this week at cartalk.com. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though Hugh Darvish throws on over the backstop whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.